Welcome to Food Stories. I'm Barb Sheldon. How are you doing? Today, before we get into our next guest, I wanted to send a very special thank you out to the people who are listening all over the world. I was just looking at my statistics for the show, and I can see people listening in Singapore and in Malaysia and in Australia, places that I really didn't think our humble little podcast would reach. It's really amazing. Thank you so much for listening. And in case you haven't noticed, to this point, we've been able to keep Food Stories ad-free. I'd like to continue that as long as I can, or at least keep the show free for you. So it really helps if you subscribe and follow the show and give us a review. And the gratitude comes directly from my heart for that. Okay, on with the show. So our next guest is one of my dear friends, and I have been waiting forever to welcome her to our Food Stories dinner table. I would like to introduce to you Miriam Behnke. Miriam is passionate about good food and has worked in Calgary's emergency food assistance system for more than 10 years as a nutritionist and a food skills coordinator, a food strategy consultant, and she now works at Brown Bagging for Calgary's Kids as an impact and evaluation specialist. When Miriam and I get together, it is always an animated conversation about food and how we can bring more food to more people. Miriam, welcome to Food Stories.
Hi, Barb.
We're so used to hanging out together, you know, that this just feels really normal.
You know, it definitely does. We're used to be like across the kitchen table. So
yeah, that's right. So this is our virtual kitchen table today, and I'm so glad to have you here. It's been, I've wanted to have you on for a long time because there's, you know, no pun intended, there's the meat of what I like to talk about the most, which is food security and access to food. And to me, you are the best person to talk about this. So really, really glad to have you today. Thank you for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me, Barb. I'm always happy to chat with you.
My pleasure. So you know, probably from listening to past episodes, that the first question that I ask people is, what is your food story? But I wanted to give you a prompt because you and I have talked about this a lot over the past few years. You wrote an article for CBC, and it was called "They Didn't Need a Recipe for Lentil Shepherd's Pie, What I Learned About Fighting Poverty at Cooking Class." And I thought, if it's okay with you, can we start your food story right there?
Yeah, you bet. Should I just dive in?
You should just dive in. Absolutely.
Awesome. Yeah, no, thanks for bringing up the article. That was what feels like many years ago because it was during COVID time, so which feels like a million years ago. But yeah, the article was a really interesting opportunity that I had to write the op-ed for CBC and tell a little bit about my story and share sort of that piece around justice and food security with a greater audience. So it was a really exciting opportunity, but it tells my story and my food story, sort of to go back in the time machine. You know, I have a background from years and years ago of fine arts, with a, you know, my degree in painting, and did that for, you know, probably about 10 years or so, painting and working in galleries and all of that. And then I had, you know, with myself, big lifestyle change and life change, and really started thinking about food and changed how I eat and, you know, my relationship with food. And it led me to a place where, you know, I wanted to learn more, and I wanted to turn that into, you know, my career. And so I went to school and got, you know, a short certification in clinical nutrition. And, you know, when I graduated, and so, you know, an older student at the time, but still very green in the world, I remember I was really, really passionate and excited about working in the social profit sector. I don't know if it was through some traveling experiences that I'd had, you know, navigating food in a different country and in a foreign country, or if it was sort of personal experiences that I had grown up with around food, but I really wanted to work in that social profit sector. and support folks with barriers to food security. So, you know, keen and green, Miriam, you know, I looked around at all the nonprofits. And so this was right around 2009. Looked around. And so looked around at the websites of a bunch of nonprofits. And I noticed like all of them were talking about health and wellness and community. And, you know, I remember looking and searching, and there was a real absence of talking about food. And for me, I was like, how can we have health? How can we have wellness? How can we have community without food? So, you know, I started calling up people and emailing people. And, you know, my first job was at the YWCA. And it was, you know, doing some nutrition counseling. But the piece that was really exciting of where it started was, you know, bringing groups together to cook and to talk about, you know, how to read nutrition labels, how to stretch a dollar, how to, you know, add more fiber into the meals that you're cooking. And, you know, it was really quickly that I realized that stuff didn't really matter. that the folks and the participants that were coming to these classes had an abundance of food skill. Mm-hmm. They could cook me under the table, right? They had an abundance of, you know, a palate and desire to cook. They had, and let me tell you, an abundance of knowledge of how to stretch a dollar. And the years of doing these classes and talking with folks, I want to, you know, try here to also dispel that myth that people who are experiencing food insecurity and poverty somehow don't know how to stretch a dollar. That actually the folks that I work with knew where all the deals were and how best to buy and where to go. And I learned really quickly that, you know, that the amazing, strong, creative, caring humans that were coming to these classes, really what they needed was not my recipe for lentil shepherd's pie, but instead they needed a place to participate and an opportunity to participate. Because the thing is, Barb, like when you don't have money, you can't participate. And when you can't participate, you're lonely and you're isolated. Mm-hmm. And that to me, and you know, we talk about this all the time, Barb, that is like the antithesis of food. Food is about community. Food is about coming together. Food is about celebration and all these other things. And so that's sort of where the journey started. That started in, you know, caring about the macronutrients and micronutrients and, you know, internal temperatures for chicken. And what it's really evolved into, Barb, is, you know, this really important piece around the right to food, and how powerful food is and the dignity that is interwoven and integrated completely into how we eat, and what happens when we don't have access to the food that we need and we want. So
if you don't mind me quoting you in that article, you say people are not experiencing food insecurity because they need help budgeting or because they've made poor lifestyle choices. People are struggling because of low wages, inadequate social assistance rates, and unaffordable housing and childcare. This was written in 2021. Can you say more about that now and what you're observing now in relation to dignity?
This isn't, I'm sorry, listeners. We'll end it on a high note, but it's not, it's, you know, when we're talking about food insecurity, like this isn't a good news story that I have. You know, the numbers, there's lots of different factors at play right now. You know, we grocery shop and we can see how inflation is impacting, you know, our budgets. And, you know, we can see, you know, and I have so much privilege to be able to freely grocery shop and choose the foods that I know that I like and my family likes and that my son will eat. And we're faced at the grocery store every day with like choices of should I buy, you know, the $8 lettuce or, you know, or the $4 apple, whatever it might be. I'm exaggerating, listeners. But
not much for some places. For our neighbors up north, that is a reality, you know. Right.
Yeah, definitely that it is that much. But our numbers are huge. We've gone up. You know, we're talking here from Calgary and in Alberta, and we were the highest in 2021 rate of food insecurity. That is measured, of course, in the territories is a lot higher, but Alberta, you know, ranked number one. You know, I work right now at an organization that that works with kids, and you know, right now we know that 1 in 4 kids lives in a household that's experiencing food insecurity. You know,
1 in 4.
1 in 4, Barb. 1 in 4, and the numbers that we have. And I won't get super nerdy into all the data. Maybe we can put a link if there's anybody out there being like, I really want to get my hands on some of these statistics and all this data and all this evidence. Well, maybe we'll put a link. But that's only taking into account, or I should say, it's not taking into account the territories. It's not taking into account folks that are living without housing. It's not taking into account people on reserves. So there's lots of numbers that aren't included in that. So, you know, we can assume that it's even more than that. And that's not that something that, as, you know, Barb, like we've been talking about this for so long, that it's a hard number. And I, you know, to listen to and to think about the ramifications of that. And I, you know, there's lots of feelings when hearing that. And there's, you know, a point that it moves, like I feel like it is my responsibility to acknowledge and use my positionality and privilege of, you know, being able to speak in rooms, to say that that's not okay. And to point to some of the really broken systems that are causing that, because it's not okay. People don't deserve, you know, or not food. Food is a basic human right, right? And everybody deserves it and should have it the way they choose to eat it, right? So
we're going to talk about some of the amazing and positive things that you've been doing, we promise. But I did want to also comment that this article led you to be interviewed on our national news station, the CBC, by Margaret Evans on The Current. And what you're talking about here is this sort of unlearning that we all are needing to do, right, in relation to food security. Do you want to comment a little bit on how that interview went for you and what your observations are for that?
Yeah, it's interesting that you ask, because I, you know, the interview was a huge learning for me. I was very pregnant as well when I was doing it. So lots of things happening when I did. I think it's important. I was nervous at first. And I think that one of the big learnings for me around doing it was, again, like that responsibility to talk more about it, to dispel myths, to start changing the narrative around how we look at supporting folks that are experiencing food insecurity. You know, we've spent, you know, since the early 80s when food banks were invented, you know, in Canada, in North America, and Edmonton actually was, you know, the first food bank. But we've been looking at a solution, I'm making little air quotes here, to food insecurity as food. You know, we'll just give people more food. That'll solve the problem. And I think, you know, when I say 1980, it can tell us that that's a lot of years of things not getting solved by giving food. And so, you know, the current was an opportunity for me to speak more about it and to talk about how food might not be the answer to solving food insecurity, because it is rooted in income, but also to speak to my learnings around dignity and how food is so powerful and means so much that when somebody doesn't have it, what does it actually feel like for it to be given to you, for you not to have the agency, you know, in a system that decides what food your child should eat, you know, and to talk about how we have a responsibility to do better, you know, to do better than the numbers that we are at, you know, 1 in 5 in Canada experiencing food insecurity, and to talk about how it is time for change, right? And how it is time for change because everybody should be able to eat and celebrate and break bread together, you know?
Yep.
Yeah.
From your early days, you moved over to the community center and now you're with an organization called Brown Bagging for Kids. Can you talk about some of the positive things, as we promised, that your food story has within it now?
Yeah. I've had the privilege of being able to work at a bunch of different organizations in Calgary around food with like a real working with the willing mentality, you know, where, you know, if somebody wanted to do a cooking program with their program, I would jump to that. But yeah, so I've landed now for the past 3.5 years at Brown Bagging with for Calgary's Kids. And we've been able to do some pretty cool stuff. I joined the organization during COVID, and knew about them. Obviously, they've been around for more than 30 years here in Calgary, but joined them specifically around their response to during COVID. So during COVID, obviously, kids weren't in schools, and that's the, you know, the organization Brown Bagging delivers lunches to kids in schools every day. Currently, more than 6,500 lunches per day. So a lot of lunches going out there. So during COVID, schools were closed, and the organization started supporting kids and families with grocery carts and sending out grocery carts to kids' homes and to families' homes. And so to me, this was really, I don't know if exciting is the right word, but it was an opportunity that I was really interested in getting involved in because they were, you know, a different method, a proxy income, close to income way of supporting families that wasn't direct food provision. And that with those cards, you know, families were able to have more choices and purchase, you know, more appropriate foods that they wanted for their kids. And they knew that their kids would eat, and to be able to do that with the comfort and the timing of how they knew best. So that's kind of how I started with the organization. We've been able to, we just finished a really exciting pilot program that was a 1-year pilot program that worked with 50 families, providing grocery carts for the families and for the kids. So we were able to support families with $150 grocery cards per child for up to 3 children per family. And that was based on, you know, budgeting type stuff for us. and for 50 families over the year. So a month, that meant that a family that had three school-age kids would get, you know, $450, or that just had one that would get $150 a month. Those cards were of a store of choosing for the families. And we did a lot of evaluation and a lot of learning and a lot of community conversations and dialogues to learn about the different experience that families had. And we partnered with the O'Brien Institute at the university and did a bunch of qualitative research specifically around dignity. And we learned a lot. We learned a lot, not only, of course, about how these cards provide more choice and more appropriate foods, how these cards improve food security, how these cards reduce stress in the families. But I think really, really interestingly, we learned about the impact these cards had on the experience of dignity in sort of two areas. We learned about how the cards, as cards, provided more dignity so that people could choose, right? And had that agency to be able to shop when and how they wanted. And also, we learned about the dignity that was experienced in these positive experiences that improve dignity for families by how we designed this program and the participatory, really inclusive and equitable approach of the design of the program that increased families and parents' self-worth and feeling like somebody cared. You know, one of the, you know, biggest sort of anchors, lighthouses, direction of the program, you know, I thought about the disability action movement and they're saying nothing about us without us, mm-hmm. You know. And that was the core of this program and how it started. The knowledge and identification that people are experts in their own lives and that they know best how to support themselves and their children. So we should go to them and ask what it is they want, right? And built a program around what people wanted. So really like... And again, I'm glad we're ending this in like some like powerful, more positive stories. But really, really important, I think, the learnings from these cards and from our participatory approach about changing the way we do things and changing the way we've always done things, you know?
Beautifully put.
Thanks, Barb.
Yeah. Let's talk about you and food for a second. Do you have a favorite food? What food brings you the most joy when you're eating it with your baby?
With my baby. So I didn't realize, Barb, that like I love food. Barb and I talk about food all the time and celebrate in food all the time. And Barb, you know that this is such a hard choice. Right.
Yes, it's like choosing a favorite child. Yes.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I only have one, so it makes it easier. but can I shift your question a little bit?
Yes.
And say like one of my favorite things around food and around eating is watching my child eat. So I don't know how to describe this, which maybe isn't good for radio, but for podcast, sorry. But I didn't realize the joy, like the absolute unconditional joy that I would feel watching my son eat food. It's indescribable. Mm. He, like it just... his little hands and him figuring it out.
Yeah.
And him experiencing it on all levels and like this visceral, and for the listeners, he's almost two. So it's very visceral and all over the place. But that I think is my favorite thing in the whole world is watching him eat food.
Does he have a favorite food or one that he reacts to the most?
He likes a lot. He's going through a little bit more of a pickier stage. I need to take out a loan for his berry consumption. but yeah, he loves sushi, right? He loves soup, which must be genetic because Barb and I love soup and are bonded by soup.
Podcast is bonded by soup because every episode people talk about soup. That's what I've learned on this podcast.
Soup. I feel like we could invite me back for the one that's all about soup as a metaphor for life and connection. Right?
That's a fantastic idea. We'll have you and we'll have Saima and a few other people, and we'll make a stone soup together. How about that?
I love it. But yeah, he loves a lot. I just keep on, one of the learnings too, that I think about in the same way when I think about how, even though those nutrition labels are important, that I think about raising, as I raise him and his relationship with food, that probably the most important thing on my list, or most important thing to think about is creating really, really positive food environments, for him, and really looking at food as a place and a time to celebrate together and to come and connect together. So
can't wait till is he holding his first little knife yet?
Oh yes, he definitely is. We've got a cooking set, and audience, Barb bought, Leo is his name, his first dish. So he's moved beyond that one, but
He's past it. There is really fabulous cooking tools for little ones out there. I just think they're never too young to start manipulating food and breaking it down and celebrating it in the kitchen with their family as it's being prepared, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep, he's got some great little choppers and plastic knives that he loves.
That's awesome. And I encourage everybody listening, if you have never cooked with the 2-year-old, it's good times. it's almost as good as cooking with my cat, but that's a whole other episode. Miriam, do you have anything else that you'd like to share with us today?
Well, I want to say first, Barb, thank you. Thank you so much for having me and carving out some space to talk about some of these really real things that sometimes are very hard to hear, but so important that we continue to talk and to shout and to advocate and to sing and to create change around these things that are broken. As I'm guessing everybody listening has a connection to food and feels how powerful it is and knows that through their experiences. And I guess it's an opportunity to also ask folks that feel that about food and know its power to also consider that experience of our neighbors that possibly are experiencing some food insecurity to a certain level. And to make some noise. Yeah.
And we'll link in our show notes and on the blog and everything, some resources for people who might be new to the idea of food security and food dignity and who want to dive a little deeper into such an important, fundamental topic. So thank you, Miriam. Should we go eat soup?
Yes, we should, Barb.
Let's go eat soup.